There's a monk that I know that he left his home village when he was a novice because he's very bright, very intelligent, but he came from real backwater. And so he went to do his studies in the, actually in the province where I spent most of my my monastic life, in Thailand, in Ubon. And that was a center of learning for the whole of the northeast of Thailand in those days. And after he finished his studies there, then he was in his early 20s, and he's sort of asking the senior monks, you know, what should I do now? And they said, well, you can do, couple different things. I mean, you can go down to Bangkok, and there's sort of institutes of higher learning there, and you can do more study, and he said, and then you know, what would be the, say, the result of that or the benefit of that? Well, you could get, you know, you can get higher degrees, and you can get you know, that's a way of being in the sort of getting noticed by the administrative monks and getting a position of authority and responsibility in administration of the Sangha. And he said, well, and then sort of, yeah, well, what's the other alternative? Well, you could just go off and go wandering as a Tudong monk and go to visit different meditation masters and go and visit these other great teachers and say, well, what would be the benefit of that? And he said, well, you could become liberated. And he said, well, I think I'll do that. Which isn't always what, you know, in a society where the Buddhism is ubiquitous and people enter the robes for many different reasons. It could be attractive to be become an abbot for some perverse reason. So he went off wandering, and similar to one of Ajahn Chah's teachers, he wandered on foot. But he didn't, all through Laos, Burma, into India, wandered in India for years, wandered up into Nepal, went up to Tibet, wandered into China as a wandering monk. He didn't actually get back to his home village. So he left in this, when he was a novice, in sort of his teens, and he didn't actually get back to his home village. He was 63 when he got back, and then to visit. So he hadn't seen his family since then. He just wandered. He'd been wandering because he's actually 115 now. He's still alive. He's a wonderful monk, and tremendous loving kindness. Just to come into his presence is really moving. I took my mother to pay respects to him. He lives in the south of Thailand, and my mom's not a gushy faith type at all. and she went up to receive like a blessing cord from him, and put it on, and then she came back. She had tears running down her face, and I don't know what it was. It was just so touching to be close to him. He has this special sort of quality. And it's years and years of living in an environment where he's practicing and in that kind of dedication to purity, living a life of, of real pure living, simplicity and purity. There's a very striking circumstance that came up, and in the forest tradition, the Tudong tradition, there's this sense of, you know, you go into unknown circumstances and even circumstances of danger and difficulty, and your main protection, your only protection, is your virtue. It's a really interesting perspective in that the more commitment to virtue, to goodness, to living a life of having refuge, that's what protects you. And that's a very common perspective. And so that oftentimes when monks do experience difficulty, then they'll come back and make that determination in their mind. It's recollecting the virtue and the goodness that they've been committed to. And one evening, he was wandering in the forest, and overnight he was in a cave, and sleeping in this cave, and in the middle of the night he woke up with this very strange sensation around his thighs, and a huge python had started to, it was up to about his mid-thighs, had started to swallow him and to eat him. So then he sort of woke up and assessed the situation. Right. what he did was, it's very typical of this ethos of Tudong, is that he made this resolution in his mind and spoke to the snake, to the python, said, "I've made a resolution to be fully enlightened in this lifetime. And if by your swallowing me, you can guarantee that resolution, then you can go ahead and swallow me. But if you can't, then you would be obstructing somebody who has made a pure aspiration. And it would be, it'd be better to let me go." And then he just made his mind very peaceful and established that mindfulness. And then after a couple minutes, the snake sort of released and started backing off. And then went off out the cave. So, yeah, these things happen. Because sometimes you read stuff like this and you say, well, this is just a made-up story somewhere. But yeah, this is somebody who I met and who he talks about some of the events in his life, and these things happen. They're wonderful examples, and I've actually asked. There's a woman who I know who's she is very dedicated practitioner. She would go up to Ubon to practice, but her parents lived in the same town that this monk lives in. So she moved back to look after her parents, and she started going to visit that monk, and she started interviewing him, and I was sort of really encouraging her to interview him. Well, because this is one of a generation that is sort of, it's reaching the end of that kind of era of these forest monks who could wander and practice for long periods of time.